Hello, and welcome to Tales for Life. In each episode of this podcast, we'll explore a folk or fairy tale from a different culture or region and discover the life lessons, values, and morals they offer that we can use today. Join me on the journey through the magical and meaningful world of folk and fairy tales. Hello, and welcome to the Tales for Life podcast. Today's episode is a special one because I'm not going to focus on just one story. What these stories have in common, even as three of them are from Asia and one from the United States, is that they're all funny. And that's why I've titled today's episode, Don't Forget to Laugh. It's no joke that we live in a world where stress and anxiety often sit down to breakfast with us and don't leave even after we tuck ourselves into bed. According to the annual Stress in America poll from the American Psychological Association, we are more stressed than we have ever been before in history. This stress, of course, takes a toll on us in so many ways. But I'm not here to talk about that. Rather, I want to focus on one of the best ways to combat stress, anxiety, and illness. It doesn't come in a bottle, a pill, or an injection. And its side effects are often limited to tears or aching sides. And, even better than that, it's free. Yes, I'm talking about laughter. According to the Mayo Clinic, the short-term benefits of laughter include stimulating your heart, lungs, and muscles, and increasing the amount of endorphins released by your brain. It can decrease your blood pressure, soothe tension, and, yep, it reduces stress. Long-term benefits include an improved immune system and pain relief by causing the body to produce its own natural painkillers. In other words, laughter is that super pill we've been looking for. Whether our forebears could actually pinpoint all of these benefits is irrelevant, but the fact that they appreciated a good laugh is apparent because there are a multitude of funny tales from cultures all over the world. And because most of the funnier tales tend to be shorter, I'll be doing several stories so that you get a nice chance to laugh more than once. With that said, let's get right down to it. The first story up is from the Muslim world, most likely Turkey, and features a popular character in many of their stories, Nasreddin Hoca, who, as a hoca, or teacher, is sometimes very wise, but often shows up as a witty or foolish character. In this particular story, he shows up as both. Nasreddin Hoca was standing in the marketplace when a stranger stepped up to him and slapped him in the face, but then said, "I beg your pardon, I thought that you were someone else." This explanation did not satisfy the Hoca, so he brought the stranger before the Qadi and demanded compensation. The Hoca soon perceived that the Qadi and the defendant were friends. The latter admitted his guilt, and the judge pronounced the sentence. The settlement for this offense is one piaster to be paid to the plaintiff. If you do not have a piaster with you, then you may bring it here to the plaintiff at your convenience. Hearing this sentence, the defendant went on his way. The Hoca waited for him to return with the piaster, and he waited, and he waited. Sometime later, the Hoca said to the Qadi, "Do I understand correctly that one piaster is sufficient payment for a slap?" "Yes," answered the Qadi. Hearing this answer, the Hoca slapped the judge in the face and said, "You may keep my piaster when the defendant returns with it," then walked away. And because Nasreddin is such a good character, here's one more from him. One night, Nasreddin awoke, thinking he had heard a strange noise outside his window. Looking out, he saw a suspicious white figure. "Who goes there?" shouted the Hoca. Hearing no reply, Nasreddin reached for his bow, set an arrow to the string, took aim, and shot in the direction of the mysterious figure. Satisfied that the intruder now would do him no harm, Nasruddin returned to bed and slept until dawn. By morning's light, he examined the scene outside his window, only to discover his own white shirt hanging on the clothesline and pierced by the arrow that he had shot during the night. "That was a close call," murmured the Hoja. "My own shirt, shot through by an arrow. What if I had been wearing it at the time?" For this next story, we'll also stay in Asia, but this time we'll be visiting China for this tale about a cheapskate titled The Most Frugal of Men. A man who was considered the most frugal of all the dwellers in a certain kingdom heard of another man who was the most frugal in the whole world. He said to his son thereupon, "We indeed live upon little, but if we were more frugal still, we might live upon nothing at all. It will be well worthwhile for us to get instructions in economy from the most frugal of men." The son agreed, and the two decided that the son should go and inquire whether the master in economic science would take pupils. In exchange of presents being a necessary preliminary to closer intercourse, the father told the son to take the smallest of coins, 1 farthing, and to buy a sheet of paper of the cheapest sort. The boy, by bargaining, got 2 sheets of paper for the farthing. The father put away 1 sheet, cut the other sheet in half, and on one half drew a picture of a pig's head. This he put into a large covered basket, as if it were the thing which it represented, the usual gift sent in token of great respect. The son took the basket, and after a long journey, reached the abode of the most frugal man in the world. The master of the house was absent, but his son received the traveler, learned his errand, and accepted the offering. Having taken from the basket the picture of the pig's head, he said courteously to his visitor, "I am sorry that we have nothing in the house that is worthy to take the place of the pig's head in your basket. I will, however, signify our friendly reception of it by putting in 4 oranges for you to take home with you." Thereupon the young man, without having any oranges at hand, made the motions necessary for putting the fruit into the basket. The son of the most frugal man in the kingdom then took the basket and went to his father to tell of thrift surpassing his own. When the most frugal man in the world returned home, his son told him that a visitor had been there, having come from a great distance to take lessons in economy. The father inquired what offering he brought as an introduction, and the son showed the small outline of the pig's head on thin brown paper. The father looked at it, and then asked his son what he had sent as a return present. The son told him he had merely made the motions necessary for transferring 4 oranges, and showed how he had clasped the imaginary fruit and deposited it in the visitor's basket. The father immediately flew into a terrible rage and boxed the boy's ears, exclaiming, "You extravagant wretch! With your hands so far apart, you appeared to give him large oranges. Why didn't you measure out small ones?" Now, lest we think that the funniest tales only come from Asian cultures, this next one comes from the American South. One time there were 2 old women who got to talking about the menfolk, how foolish they could act, and what was the craziest fool thing their husbands had ever done. The talking soon got to arguing, so they finally made a bet over which one could make the biggest fool of her husband. So that evening, the first one said to her man when he come home from work, "Old man, do you feel all right?" "Why, yes," he says, "I feel fine." "Well," she told him, "you sure do look awful puny." Next morning, she woke him up and said to him, "Stick out your tongue, old man." He stuck his tongue out, she looked at it hard and said, "Law me, you better stay in bed today, you must be real sick from the look of your tongue." She went into the kitchen and brought back all the bottles of medicine and tonic they had, and then dosed the old man out of every bottle. She made him stay in bed several days, and she kept talking to him about how sick he must be, dosed him every few hours, and wouldn't feed him nothing but mush. Then one morning the old woman came in and sat down by the bed and looked at him real pitiful, started sniffling and wiping her eyes on her apron. "Well, honey," she says, "I'll miss you when you're gone." She sniffed some more. I done had your coffin made. Well, the day that first old woman started talking her old man into his coffin, the other one had gone to her house. About the time her old man came home from work, she'd got out her spinning wheel and went to whirling it. There wasn't a scrap of wool on the spindle, and the old man, he finally looked over there and took notice of her and says, "What in the world are you doing, old woman?" "Spinning," she told him. And before he could say anything, she says, "Yes, the finest thread I ever spun. It's wool from virgin sheep, and they tell me anybody that's been telling his wife any lies can't see the thread." So the old man, he come on over there and looked at the spindle and says, "Yes, indeed, it surely is mighty fine thread." Well, the old woman, she'd be there at her wheel every time her old man came in from the field, spinning wind, and every now and then take the shuck off the spindle like it was full of thread and laid in a box. Then one day the old man come in and she was fooling with her loom, says, "Got it all warped off today, just got done threading it on the loom." And directly she sat down and started in weaving, step on the treadles, throw in the shuttle, and it being empty. The old man, he'd come and look and tell her what fine cloth it was, and the old woman, she would weave right on, made him think she was working day and night. Then one evening she took hold on the beam and made the old man help her unwind the cloth. "Lay it on the table, old man. Look out, you're letting it drag the floor." Then she took her scissors and went to cutting. "What you making, old woman?" "Making you the finest suit of clothes you ever had." She got out a needle directly and sat down like she was sewing. And there she was every time the old man got back to the house, working that needle back and forth. So we come in one evening, she says to him, "Try on the breeches, old man, here." The old man, he shucked off his overalls and made like he was putting on the new breeches. "Here's your new shirt," she told him, and he pulled off his old one and made his arms go this way and that way, getting into his fine new shirt. "Button it up, old man." And he put his fingers up to his throat and fiddled them right on down. "Now," she says, "let's see, does the coat fit you?" And she come at him with her hands up like she holding out his coat for him. So he backed up to her and stuck his arms in his fine new coat. "Stand off there now and let me see, is it all right?" "Yes, it's just fine. You sure do look good." And the old man stood there with nothing on but his shoes and his hat and his long underwear. Well, about that time, the other old man's funeral was appointed, and everybody in the settlement started for the burying ground. The grave was all dug, and the preacher was there, and here came the coffin in a wagon, and finally the crowd started gathering. And pretty soon, that old man with the fine new suit of clothes came in sight. Well, everybody's eyes popped open, and they didn't know whether they ought to laugh out loud or not. But the kids went to giggling, and about the time the old man got fairly close, one feller laughed right out. And then they all throwed their heads back and laughed good. And the old man, he would try to tell somebody about his fine new suit of clothes, and then the preacher busted out laughing and slapping his knee. And everybody got to laughing and hollering so hard, the dead man sat up to see what was going on. Some of them folks broke and ran when the corpse rose up like that, but they saw him start in laughing. Laughed so hard he nearly fell out the coffin. So they all came back to find out what and all was going on. The two old women had started quarreling about which one had won the bet, and the man in the coffin heard him, and when he could stop laughing long enough, he told him, "Don't lay it on me, ladies. He's got me beat a mile." Did you laugh, or at least smile? I hope so, because I do just about every time I read these stories. Even better, when I'm done, I often find myself feeling a little better too. Folk tales aren't the only way to give yourself a chuckle and maybe a little boost to mind and body, but they definitely are one way. And the fact that many of them have been around for so long speaks to the timelessness and good medicine of good humor. It was good for the body and soul back then, and it's good for the body and soul today. I wish all of you a happy, fun-filled day, and hope you find ways to keep laughing.